Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from thedraftnetwork.com, along with Ben Solak, also from thedraftnetwork.com, because I came back and we fired Trevor, Ben.
Trevor has been fired, much like John was fired on the Monday episode last week.
But Trevor, now I'm back.
Been fired. We're experimenting with multiple staffs here, yes. And we're just firing everybody and we're seeing what happens. I'm sure by next Monday I'll be fired, or perhaps tomorrow when Trevor's not in New Jersey.
Yes, you probably will be fired tomorrow. Just giving you a heads up, I wanted to give you a 24-hour notice. But yes, this will probably be your. No, I'm just kidding. Ben's been awesome jumping on the podcast and filling in and helping out. Trevor is in the New York travel vortex, if you've ever been, and I've been twice and would not like to be again. It can be quite a hang up traveling through New York and getting from one place to the next and take hours, even though you're only traveling a few miles and things like that. So he's coming back from that, trying to come back with a Bucks loss, of course. So he is undoubtedly in somber spirits, and I think he had to catch a flight at like 5 a.m. this morning, by the way, Ben. So you and I may be up late recording this podcast, but got to give it to Trevor. He's going to be running on like 4 hours of sleep probably, which is typical Monday for him. But anyway, my man, how'd the podcast go with Trevor last week? You guys have a good time?
Yeah, we had an absolute blast. I think I did pretty well for you against the spread. I wasn't keeping careful track of it. I know I won the Thursday night game because Trevor has his rule about taking Rodgers with the points, which did not go well for him because they were facing a good Seattle team. So we started out 1-0, but I haven't really followed it since then. But no, it was an absolute blast. It was a good time. You missed a lot of fun, like first round of Senior Bowl invites and stuff like that. But obviously, we're glad to have you back. I've been told I'm contractually obligated to say that, so we're glad to have you back.
Whoever told you that, it's a lie. You're not contractually obligated.
Did you listen to the Friday Super Show yet?
I did not, actually. I should listen to it, shouldn't I?
You know what the concept was for the Friday Super Show.
I don't. I took my vacation was taken very seriously. It was not a vacation at all because Disney with a two-year-old is not a vacation. But I swore off work for a week of my life and was probably 90% successful with just huge step in the right direction. So I have not listened to Friday's episode. So should it be a secret?
I won't give you the topic, but I'll just say that I was responsible for answering for myself and then also for you. And this was a topic on which we would have greatly different results. So it was a highly enjoyable, very chaotic experience. I would greatly recommend the Friday Super Show to anybody listening who hasn't listened to it, but especially to John, because I had to like give answers for you and I had no idea what was going on.
That's amazing. I actually will need to make that priority listening sometime today. For those who don't know, follow the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast Network, Locked On NFL Network, actually. Follow the whole Locked On NFL Network. Got tons of great pods out there, team content, a Locked On NFL podcast with Matt Williamson 5 days a week. Tons of great co-hosts on that podcast with him, depending on the day of the week. He's got brilliant co-hosts from all around sports media realm. And don't forget, follow them on Instagram and on Twitter, Locked On NFL Network. Lots of great stuff happening there, and I want to make sure that you guys are following them on all social media platforms. Ben, today we are talking about the college football landscape of 2019 draft-eligible quarterbacks. We'll begin with Justin Herbert and Dwayne Haskins, who are kind of, if they declare, these are the big names, these are the guys that could go high. That's been the perception for a while now. Here we are, 1 week left in college football regular season, which is crazy to say. Do you feel like at this point, Justin Herbert's best course of action, and I know middle of the season, I was kind of pushing, I was like, business-wise, it makes sense for Herbert to come out, and that still may be true, but also I feel like every single week he plays, I just feel like he's not making any progress, and maybe that leap will happen if he goes to the NFL early, but then I look at him and I'm like, maybe he would benefit from another year because I do think he's improved from where he was last year and the year before. And so I think that there is kind of that ascension for him that's happened a little bit, but I don't know if it's pro ready yet. And I know you've had your reservations with him too. At this point, would you like to see him go back to school?
Yeah, if we're talking purely from a player development perspective, I absolutely would like to see him go back to school. And honestly, that applies for most quarterbacks ever. the best thing you can get as a quarterback is in-game experience, right? And when you're like, it's like Oregon's like going to be a huge program, obviously, but if you're not like getting a massive amount of attention and there's not like too much pressure on you to like win your conference or whatever, then you're getting a ton of experience without necessarily the ticking time bomb that is that of being on an NFL team, NFL expectations, NFL media coverage, et cetera, et cetera.
And often you know, going to a bad NFL team because you're picked high in the draft.
Right, exactly. And it's very difficult to calibrate those expectations of what happens when the coaching staff shifts, which obviously is something that Herbert has been dealing with. So, you know, he didn't really dodge that bullet there in Oregon. But I would, you know, it's very rare, I think, that you find a junior quarterback who you say, like, no, like, you probably just should come out right now and go and be great. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be a very strong prospect. Typically, you can find enough holes in a quarterback's game in college, in my opinion, that he should go back. And with Herbert, I think it's very clear to see the direct line between starting experience and improving his game, I should say. It's very easy to tell how his weaknesses can be improved if he gains more starting experience. A lot of times he's doing some stuff post-snap where he's looking for routes that he should have known were closed off pre-snap, and he's kind of making the same mistake a couple times in a game, and he's locking onto his first read, he's not feeling pressure. This is stuff that gets just ironed out with time. You know what I mean? You kind of got to get out there and get in the flow of it. I think that's one of the best ways to fix those issues. So yeah, Herbert, from a developmental perspective, just purely on the field, since I watched his sophomore tape last year, this seemed like a guy who I thought was going to be more of a project. If you're drafting him now this year because he comes out, because he wants to secure a top draft pick and a top contract, which makes total sense. Yeah, secure the bag, precisely. If you're drafting him, then you're kind of looking at him similarly to how I felt you looked at Sam Darnold last year in terms of a player you hope to win with in year two. Right. You're drafting him not with the anticipation of becoming immediately competitive. And I think that Jets fans and Jets coaching staff should be happy with what they've seen from Darnold in terms of, yeah, like he's had some great flashes and he's obviously a good bounce back guy who's not getting super thrown off by when he has these bad games and he's got a short memory. Those are good signs for year two. And that's, I think, if you're drafting Herbert in 2019, that's what you're looking for, a year two sort of a guy.
Isn't there some crazy similarities between Mitch Trubisky and Justin Herbert right now?
Like, okay. I'm so happy you said that. I'm sorry, because I've been sitting on, okay, so is Herbert Trubisky? Like, yeah. for a couple weeks now. Uh-huh. Just in terms of what you're seeing from Trubisky in that simple stuff becomes too hard for him in Chicago, and hard stuff is easier than it should be, and he's at his best when he's just kind of making things up on the move. Like, that's all very Herbertian to me.
But has an awesome arm. I think Herbert's even better than Trubisky, but Trubisky had a very good arm, could throw off platform, had these bouts of awesome accuracy on high degree of difficulty throws that made you want to buy in, athletic enough to obviously create outside of structure when they need to, make plays with their legs. But still, the inexperience shows up. And I think about this, and I like Trubisky coming out, and obviously he's playing well now, and the Bears are in a great position. I should say he's playing well. He's playing okay. He's playing good.
Playing well enough that they've got NFC North in their sights, baby.
Correct, yes. So well enough is probably the way to put it, but he also, I think, is in a completely ideal situation right now where he was not at all in his rookie season. Looked up and down in his rookie season. I think he's been up and down this season too. I mean, I think even Bears fans would say he's probably the biggest question mark on the team right now in terms of key components that you need to work to get to where they want to go. And I wonder, would that have been the case if now Mitch Trubisky was not in a situation that I think Justin Herbert's in a much better situation if he returns to Oregon to potentially improve, especially if Marcus Arroyo, the offensive coordinator there who he's tight with, remains there. I think there's a lot of good growth that Herbert can undergo, but I wonder sometimes, like, if Trubisky had stayed in school, obviously business-wise it was the right decision to come out, no question. It'll be the same thing for Herbert. But if he'd stayed in school, how much better of a player maybe would he be right now? Would he be closer to kind of where the rest of that Bears roster is at, which amazingly, thanks to the work of Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, seems like they're ready to compete, like they're ready to go, and he's the kind of one element that you wonder about every time they take the field.
Yeah, and it goes back to, I think, a common sentiment that you hear about the ability to develop, like offensive tackles, you hear this about a lot at the college level. you're not recruiting an offensive tackle for most like strong, you know, Power Five conference championship fighting schools. You're not recruiting offensive tackles with the intent of developing them so that they're good starters, so they build good tools. No, you're just trying to find like the biggest, longest guys who can move their feet a little bit, and then you get them out there and you just try to like survive right away with them. You know what I mean? Like there's a heavy critique when it comes to, you know, we tell these players to return back to school, but really how much attention do they get on the technical side of things from college mm-hmm. coaches when these coaches are just trying to win right now. You know what I mean? And so with a guy like Trubisky, he goes from a Larry Fedora system in North Carolina, obviously. Then it's 1 year in Chicago where everything was awful, right? From stem to stern, just like offense style was bad, head coaching, there was no stability. And then you come in with Nagy and with, you know, Helfrich, obviously, who's there as well, advising that offense. And they've pretty nicely done some good stuff in terms of, I don't want to say quarterback-proofing the offense, but when they're coming out, they came out with the straight T formation today, right, against the Vikings mm-hmm. tonight. You know, they're coming out with stuff that NFL defenses aren't great at matching up at, because it's so unique, and they've got a ton of weapons there, obviously, that just let Trubisky kind of hit guys in space and let them finish some work for him. And then, obviously, getting Trubisky outside of the pocket, teams are just now starting to figure out how much of a threat he is to run the football. Like, there's a lot that they get going for Trubisky that isn't going to develop him in terms of in-game experience at like reading a full field of progressions and like staying in the pocket and getting to your check down. You know, they kind of they cut some corners there, which isn't bad. That's the characteristic of a good offense, a smart offense.
Sure.
You just wonder how much is he going to be developing under Nagy in this system if it kind of stays so white bread, which we have to wait, I think, a year or two to see that. Well, he's got him, you know, in a training camp for a couple of years. But I agree with you right now in the sense that I don't know what Trubisky's developmental path looks like, because number one, I can't seem to get, you know, three games in a row where he's good or three games in a row where he's bad. You know, he's kind of always all over the place.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, if the Bears are ready to compete, then they're not going to be spending that time in practice really working on like the mechanics and the fundamentals. You know what I mean? Like that's going to be all offseason stuff right now because they're competitive. It's going to be like, go. We got to win.
Yeah, it's an interesting comparison, I think, to make between the two, and you wonder if Trubisky goes back, you know, to UNC, would he be maybe a little bit more prepared? Still doing well, obviously, but again, Bears situation, horrible as a rookie. If he would continue under that situation, we'd be talking about him as a bust right now. Not you and I necessarily, but the national media. He ended up landing in because of the wise hiring of Matt Nagy and mm-hmm. all the pieces they brought in there. That situation ended up being really transformed into now one of the more ideal situations in the entire NFL, I think. I think it's that good of a situation where multiple threats in the backfield. Trubisky has more time in the pocket. If you look at Pro Football Focus's numbers, he's got more time in the pocket than almost any quarterback in the NFL on a game-to-game basis. And the dude has all day to throw the football. He's got weapons all over the field. Anthony Miller's been thriving. Taylor Gabriel made some crazy catches last night.
Shaheen
is back. Trey Burton's there. Tariq Cohen. I mean, this offense is low. They have everything, and it's all a matter of Trubisky. Is Justin Herbert going to step into that type of a situation? I doubt it. And
if he steps into New York, he's going to have weapons, but no offensive line, and then it depends on your opinion of Pat Shurmur.
Not great. Right. I don't think he lasts long there. So I think there's instability, but you're right. The weapons would at least be there. Oakland is a disaster. I mean, that is a situation you can't go to and play early on. Nor do I think they will be barking up that tree, and we'll talk about that in a second. But, there's a lot to talk about with Herbert in taking a quarterback that is so far mentally from being a finished product and plugging him into an NFL situation on what will probably be a bad football team and how that could change year two and be a great situation like Trubisky and Goff situations, or could just remain kind of this. Like, Josh Rosen's probably, I mean, Steve Wilks probably gets another year, you would just guess. Maybe not, hopefully not, but Arizona's a disaster. I mean, that's not going to get, I don't know how much better that gets here, too. So, you've got an issue there. You've got some problems there that I don't know how that gets sorted out. We'll see what happens with the Jets. We'll see what happens with the Browns. But you say three quarterbacks coming into the NFL, all in situations that their head coach either will be fired or should be fired. And their offensive coordinators in two cases are already gone. So there's a lot going on with those guys already, and it's going to be huge in terms of developing those guys for the next level. So maybe it is best for Herbert to stay in college, because right now, certainly in a vacuum, not a guy that I think I would give a first round grade to. As much as I think it is the NFL's responsibility, if they draft Herbert, to understand where he is at and finish developing him. Right now, if I just had to line him up, I would say, you know, I don't think I can give this guy a first round grade right now. I think he has tons of talents and traits, you know, very similar to how I saw Sam Darnold. I just couldn't give him a first round grade where he was, but I still, you know, and I don't add value for the quarterback position. High second, and I liked him and all that kind of stuff, but it was that whole projecting it out thing. His situation's going to matter a ton, where I didn't think with Rosen and Mayfield it did quite as much. We'll talk about a couple more guys too, but before we did that, you mentioned, Ben, that you maybe did some good work for me in the prediction department last week on the Thursday show, where we picked the NFL games, because people always ask us for advice. They ask us who to bet on. We don't always know who's going to win. That's evident in our records, Trevor's and I's, at least a week to week. But if you do, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust us, guys. They're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On is the promo code to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On is the promo code when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid, and MyBookie will match the listener's first deposit 100% up to $1,000. We thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. So let's talk about Dwayne Haskins, because the hype is there now because he led this comeback win over Maryland.
Okay,
I just laugh, man. We are such a results-oriented, driven sports media field. Okay, incredible.
Don't even get me started on that, because I had to deal with a Philadelphia Eagles media today where the Eagles lost to the Saints 48-7, and the takes were a fly-in, my good man. But Haskins, Maryland, John, I thought Ohio State on the podcast with Trev, I was joking. I was like, Ohio State's bad. Ohio State's going to lose to Maryland. I don't even care. And then they almost did, and I was so mad when they pulled that thing out.
Did they ever almost? I mean, Ohio State's bad, no question. Their defense is bad. Secondary's bad. Secondary in Ohio State is bad. That's hard. I did not think those would be words I would say, but here we are. Listen, Haskins has great tools. There's no doubt about it. He made some good throws, but he also, the results of a lot of his throws were good, but the process was not very good. The accuracy was not very good. A lot of the time when he's throwing down the field, he's underthrowing these guys badly, yet they're making adjustments. Defensive backs aren't making adjustments that will make adjustments in the NFL, and he's ending up with 50-yard completions where it should have been intercepted or incomplete, and it will be in the NFL. We are so results-oriented. We look at that box score. We say, oh, most passing yards and blah, 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 most passing touchdowns in a season. Ohio State quarterback, JT Barrett, blah, blah, all this stuff. Man, it doesn't matter. Like, look at what you're watching on tape. I think Haskins is talented. He's a redshirt sophomore playing in his first year as a starting quarterback in college football in a system that is pretty simple for a quarterback. I would not describe Ohio State's offense as complex for a quarterback the vast majority of the time. And he's not played well in several key games this season. He was good against Maryland. He was not the biggest issue. It was Maryland, folks. And he still wasn't great. So is this really the game that we're going to cape up for and say, Dwayne Haskins, QB1? Like, is this that game? I don't know, man.
Here's the thing. Herbert is a classic situation. You hit it on the nail on the head for me. Redshirt sophomore, his first year starting, right? Which simply, if you take Herbert's top 50 throws this season, I have a bona fide number one overall pick for you, clearly. Right. If you take Herbert's 50 worst throws and put him in front of somebody, you're wondering if this dude can even get drafted, right? Like, it is impossibly up and down right now with Haskins. in terms of
wait. So you were saying Herbert. You mean Haskins?
Oh, I meant Haskins. Okay, Haskins. They're both they start with H and they're seven letters long. And whatever.
I could see it being both quarterbacks. That's why I didn't stop you because I wasn't sure if you were making a parallel here.
I think Herbert gives you more of a streakiness in terms of game to game. Like he'll have a hot game and then a bit of a colder game. Whereas Haskins, it's just throw to throw. Yeah. I think he'll come out and he'll you're just a mixed bag. You don't really know what you're getting. I think his deep ball is especially pretty, which is exciting. And what I like about it is very often when he
it's pretty, but he underthrows it a ton, man. A ton. Yes.
No, I know, and he underthrows it a lot, especially when he's dealing with when they run that little stab concept when they've got the slot phase going on, mm-hmm. and you want to see him put that outside to the outside shoulder. He'll leave it hang on the inside shoulder, and that's a big problem. When he's throwing with touch is where I think you have a big mechanical issue, because when you're throwing with zip, when you're throwing with heat, and you're trying to generate power, well, that's what quarterback mechanics are built for, right? They're right. put together so that you can generate power and so you can normalize your throwing motion. When you throw with touch, you're kind of mentally taking power off of the throw, right? You're not throwing at like max velocity. Mm-hmm. And so very often you'll see young quarterbacks who step away from their mechanics on touch throws because they feel like they need to take away power, and they start going all arm. And then Haskins goes all arm a lot. And he usually has a compact motion. It gets elongated. He usually has a nice lead step. It gets shortened. And he throws all arm little, like, soft little follow through, and that's where that ball flutters and dies in the air. And the reality with that to me is he's a redshirt sophomore playing in his first year. Like, of course, you know what I mean? Like, this is what right. we have with young quarterbacks. Like, this is the problem. And you got to – you know, they obviously when you become – on the draft radars, you start getting with these coaches and they help you iron that out and you throw better at the combine and everybody freaks out or whatever. And then you're at Ohio State and you're going to go play Michigan and everybody's going to watch this game and it's going to be a big deal. The breadth of Haskins' work, like if he came out and Herbert didn't, I wouldn't be too much more afraid of taking Haskins early round one as I would be taking Herbert early round one. Like they both kind of freak me out, but if you have to do it, you have to do it. The thing with Haskins is Herbert's I call him a year two guy. I mean, Haskins, I would call a year three guy in the sense that you've really got to build him up. You know, you can love the tools. He's got a hose, right? He can whip it. But you really have to build up. I mean, he is petrified in the middle of the field, right?
I like Herbert's arm more than Haskins, to be honest.
Do you really?
I do. I think Herbert can sling it, and it's clean, man.
I think Herbert can get it farther down the field. But I think I watch Haskins hit some sideline throws that impressed me. Though, again, I keep on hearing myself and wanting to hedge my bets because sometimes Haskins will just not throw with soft mechanics and he'll take velocity off of it. So, Haskins is a guy that, again, I can see some great stuff. And if you cherry pick some really good plays, like I'm not accusing anybody, but if you do, then, you can really illustrate a strong quarterback. I just don't see the snap-to-snap consistency with him right now. And this is why in this class – I think that Will Grier is a legit shot to be overdrafted and drafted highly because, and this is crazy, because Grier is not consistent. But between Herbert, Haskins, and Grier, Grier's the most consistent, I think, by a head, right? Like, by a comfortable amount. And that, if you're a team, if you're a Jacksonville team who's kind of like, you know, anecdotally just a quarterback away, we'll get the guy who can be consistent in 2019. And to me, that's Grier.
Picturing Greer in Jacksonville with all that they've kind of gone through at that position. Now I know you said more consistent than those two. I don't know if I can agree with that, but I get where you're coming from. And man, if Greer's the most consistent and his biggest knock is still consistency, that is just troubling.
I would say the most consistent potential top quarterback we have in this class is Brett Rippon out of Boise.
Sure.
He still does some stupid stuff. He does some stuff where you want to punch him through the screen. Like, what were you thinking? But it's really just generally he's a well-known commodity. Rippon is so important to get him into the Senior Bowl. It's crucial to get eyes on him, at least from our perspective. Because simply, I cannot tell you exactly how I feel about his arm strength yet, because sometimes I catch a San Diego State game early this year and I'm worried. And then I catch the Fresno State game this year and I'm like, okay, so we're live. Well, where's the truth? Are we in between? Is the arm getting better? Was there like an injury I didn't know about? You know, so Rippon, he's got to clear some physical benchmarks, but he has the opportunity to be that, you know, plug and play guy, if you want to call him that. He just needs his climb is going to be conditional on some eye test stuff that you're going to get later in the process.
Right. Yeah. Different questions with him for sure. You know, there's always that path for a safer quarterback to work out over guys with way more upside. There's no question there. But I can't see him being an actual first round prospect in the eyes of NFL teams, regardless of how we feel about him. But I will say that out of Haskins, Herbert, and maybe whoever else you might, whether it's Greer or Locke, you know, and we'll talk about Daniel Jones in a second. To me, I look at Haskins and I just say, man, if you really feel like as a redshirt sophomore, like how do you feel like you're ready for that step, you know, in your first year as a starter? And Herbert's had more experience already, and we're mm-hmm. still talking about maybe Herbert should go back to school. Haskins, man, I don't think it's even a question. And I know there's some reports trickling out. Eric Galco said he expects him to declare. Matt Miller came out and he had earlier said he didn't expect him to, I think, and then switched it up and said more recently that he was hearing that he might declare. So I don't know. To me, I think it's a hasty decision. Now, definitely, again, we said it, like he could land in a spot and be developed well, but I just would rather see him go back.
Here's my thing with the rumor that he was going to declare. I always get scared about rumors where all of a sudden everybody has it at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that means like one person is spreading it. You know what I mean? Like one dude in Ohio State hit up everybody. In the sense, like, you kind of like...
But maybe he's right.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't know. I'll tell you why, if I were in Haskins' shoes, I would absolutely be ready to declare right now. Number one, I'm going to get paid. Number two... I'm looking at Tate Martell behind me and say, I'm going to get the heck out of this school. And number three, I'm looking at Urban Meyer, my head coach, and saying, yeah, I'm doubly getting the heck out of this school. I'm getting out of Ohio State right now. This is not a good situation.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the looking at it from Haskins' perspective, obviously the business side of things is different than what we're analyzing here, so certainly he'll get paid. Second, I haven't seen enough of Tate Martell. I mean, I know the hype's there, but...
All I know, I'll put it to you this way. If Urban stays, Martell, from a play, from a perspective as a prospect, has the mobility that you've typically seen successful in the Meyer system. So that's if Urban stays. Martell just makes more sense in terms of the prototype, right? And then the other side, if Urban goes, well, you don't really know who's going to be coming in to potentially coordinate the offense, and you don't know who they're going to like to use. So nobody's really attached to you. So I think it's a danged if you do, danged if you don't. Like, I expect some changes in Ohio State at some point because this is a letdown season for them, especially after Michigan beats them around the pond next Saturday. By the way, you're out on Michigan, right? You're not a fan?
I would say that I'm not a fan, but it doesn't mean that I don't think they'll win the Big Ten and get the playoff spot. So, I mean, like, teams that I'm a fan of are only really teams that can beat Alabama, which is potentially Clemson and Georgia when they're engaged in on mode. But
have you seen the Michigan Ohio State line yet?
I have not. How bad is it?
What would you guess it is? Guess.
Michigan favored by 5.
I've seen 3 and 2.5.
Okay. All right.
I jumped on it right away, baby. Take it. Michigan -3, no hesitation. They're going to win that game by multiple scores.
Winovich is hurt though, right?
I'm not even slightly. They're going to win by multiple scores.
All right. No, I mean, I think Ohio State will be up for that game. I haven't decided who I'm officially going with yet, but I've got a couple days to make that decision. But
you got to get back in the saddle. I get it. You're not ready for Monday hot takes.
Correct. Yes. Daniel Jones, real quick before we wrap up the pod.
Sure.
I watched the guy. I've seen 3 games now. I need to see more. I have to preface that. I need to see more of Daniel Jones than what I've seen because 2 of the games were right after the collarbone, and I get it. Maybe he's a little rusty coming back, but I watched the Clemson game the other day. He's okay. He's a dink and dunk guy. Like, the offense is simple. It's easy for the quarterback. They know how to make it friendly for him. He definitely can operate in that system. I have no clue why this guy has become the savior for this quarterback class. Like, is it just that bad? Is it that plain? Like, what is special about Daniel Jones? I don't, like, he just looks like every other mid-round quarterback that comes out every year. I don't, like, he doesn't even have great tools. At least some of these other guys in the past were interesting. At least Josh Allen had a cannon. Like, My goodness. Like, at least Tom Savage could throw it far when y'all hyped him up. Like,
wow, you just pulled Tom Savage for the Daniel Jones talk. I love it.
Listen, I just, you know, at least give me somebody who's exciting, who has a trade I can hang my hat on, you know? I mean, man, Daniel Jones, like, I just don't see it. I don't know. Do you see it with this guy?
I can squint real hard and see it, yes. I can tell you right now why he's being touted as the savior. That's the easiest question in the world. Is he big? Is he tall? Is he white? And can he run? And we're 4 for 4 on Daniel Jones.
White has so, whipped cream.
Yes. Listen, here, I'll just like write it down. Write down the date and the time if you're listening, and then hit me up on Twitter when this happens. When Daniel Jones gets lauded in the draft process for a pro style of play, despite the fact that his offense is spreadtastic.
Right. And despite the fact that the NFL is largely spreadtastic now, or at least the more successful programs are.
No, when I chart Daniel Jones for contextualized quarterbacking, and he has like 4 targets between the numbers further than 5 yards down the field over his entire season.
Right.
And we dealt with so many spread question marks for like Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield. Just please, hit me up and remind me of this moment. Because the reality with Daniel Jones is that if he declares this year or next year, if he graduates early and he kills the Senior Bowl, if he graduates early and he flops at the Senior Bowl, we are going to have questions about his ability to throw against underneath and intermediate zones. We're like, how is he able to throw between layers of coverage? I don't know. And I have not seen anything yet on his film to indicate to me I'm going to get that information. And that's not a Daniel Jones, I think, like specific. Well, it is specific to Jones, but it's not individual to him in the sense that like Drew Locke is a guy that definitely has that sort of a question. And I think that Steven Montez out of Colorado, who's probably going to come out, is another guy who's going to have that sort of a question. In terms of they're not asked to do enough in their offense where you can say, oh, they can hit every throw on the field. You could say they have the arm too. I've seen velocity. I've seen depth. I've seen touch. But you just haven't seen them stare at the coverage, recognize where the flat hook curl player is going, and throw where he isn't. You know, that's a tough thing to do. That's a small space. You have to have quick instincts. And you have to be able to hit windows, you know, with anticipation. And that's not something that I've seen from Jones. That's a huge
at all. I haven't seen that at all.
That I don't think I'm going to be able to check exactly. Yeah. And so I can tell you why the NFL is getting hyped about him. I can't tell you how long that's going to be able to hold water. You know what I mean? Like when we get, you know, when we get beyond scouts, watching games, enjoying the good throws that he makes, talking with, you know, Cutcliffe and whatever, and like hearing good things about his development, making body comparisons when he makes throws across his body with his big old frame and whatever. Like when we get to the next step where you've got like real, you know, heavy hitting decision makers breaking down the film in their offices, in their cities, in their stadiums, I don't think the Jones hype is going to hold up. I think we're going to see him start to fall back.
And that's where that distinction happens for me, where you say the NFL, well, I can tell you why the NFL is high on Daniel Jones. I don't think they are. And I don't know that they will be as high on Daniel Jones as at least what we're being led to believe right now, that he could be in the play for QB1 or for top 10 or whatever like that. I think it's very important to make that distinction between what the media sells you is what the NFL is doing and what the NFL is actually doing. Rarely do the two align at quarterback, especially over the past 5 or 6 years. I mean, how many quarterbacks have we heard the media tell us the NFL is falling in love with? They could go round one. They will go early day two.
Davis Webb, baby.
Davis Webb, Tom Savage, Luke Falk, Brad Kaya for forever when the NFL didn't care about him. He was supposed to be in competition for the number one pick or whatever. I mean, it's ridiculous. Davis Webb, like you said, who else? I just had another one in my head. I mean, it's just been over.
No, but your point is very, very well served in the sense of like when we talk right now about, oh, the NFL likes this guy, it means that one dude caught a game of his and then talked to somebody about him, right? Like nobody has done intensive work on him to the point where they can like actually hang their hat on him. Nobody's there yet.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And so I think you look at the way the NFL has evaluated quarterbacks and how much has changed over the last 5-6 years and things, they began to value more and more, and you've seen a dramatic shift there away from some of these types that the media still thinks the NFL is interested in. They're not. Oh, Nate Peterman was another one. We heard he was going to go second round, and all. I mean, we heard that for, what was he, fifth round pick? I mean, so again,
the Nate NFL, Peterman, bad Canada product.
Right. Yes, very true. The NFL, yeah, I don't know how much I'm buying that they'll like, be in love with Daniel Jones at the end of the day. Now, the one disclaimer in there, they may not love Daniel Jones, and the reality still may be, A, there's one dumb GM out there. I'm looking at you, John Gruden. And B, this quarterback class may be so bad that it means somebody's going to lie.
Because wait, Gruden with Jones makes too much sense, right, man.
And Trevor Sikkema wrote about that. Trevor wrote about that Draft Network, yeah.
He's literally, right now, he's a worse Derek Carr. It's perfect. Basically,
yeah.
It's exactly what I would expect from Gruden. Move on from Carr just to get a worse, younger version of him. I love it.
One that he thinks he can build himself. We'll see what happens. Gruden's not had the greatest track record with quarterbacks, which bodes really, really well for this Raiders rebuild. 100 million. Let me tell you, you definitely want to hire guys with a bad quarterback track record who've been out of the game for 10 years. Good call. Give them all the power in the world. Okay, so tomorrow back on the podcast will be Trevor Sikkema and myself. We will be discussing, we'll discuss a lot of things, actually. I got to talk to Trevor about exactly what he wants to talk about, but got to talk about some of these NFL situations too, and touch on some of this stuff. But also, Senior Bowl invites are pouring out. We may get some official invites tomorrow, I think, tomorrow. We'll see how it ends up panning out. We may get some of that action, though, which will be fun, and we'll have to break down that throughout the week as well. And we'll talk about kind of who we want to see in Mobile as these invitations start to leak out. And we start to hear back on who's accepted them and who hasn't. So all that and more coming up this week on the podcast. As always, thank you guys so much for listening, and keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.